There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast. I am Karen. This may sound very different to the listeners because normally this is Colin speaking. We're really shaking it up today. I've got two special guests with me today, but before we dive into who those folks are, we're going to talk about why we're doing this special episode. Today, we are bridging generations. We're talking about what the markets are doing, what it's like to work in finance, and what surprises you when you go from classroom to practice. And so today I have with me two special guests that are both students in finance. Emile, welcome to the show. Would you like to give a brief introduction of who you are and where you come from?
Yeah, 100%. Thanks, Karen, for having me. So my name is Emile. I've grew up in Calgary, Alberta. Recently just finished my first year at Concordia University in Montreal. And then I just came back for the summer and we've been just exploring lots of trading lately, having lots of fun doing that. And so, yeah. Blessed to be here and happy. Thank you.
Excellent. So I have just one question. When you say we, who's we? You said we're here doing this.
Oh yeah. Sorry. I'm with my...
Do you mean the three of us in the room? Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. I was like, okay, who else are we talking about? Okay. Excellent. And so you just finished your first year.
Correct. Yeah.
And you're back in Calgary for the summer.
Yeah.
And are you working in the markets right now?
Currently not working in the markets. Actually, I'm a bartender. I work local on 8th. Come see me, say hi. And I do trade quite a bit. So my schedule works out. I work usually like afternoon or evenings. Mm-hmm. And so I like to wake up around 7:30 for that market open and have a little bit of fun before I go to the gym, enjoy my day.
That sounds like a great lifestyle. Now,
it's been pretty great.
I was going to ask why finance, but I'm already getting a sense that you love markets and love making money.
Yeah, something like that. I like the unpredictability about it. It's like never the same thing. I think I'd go dull if I was doing the exact same thing every day.
Interesting. Oh. Love it. Excellent. Okay. And then we've also got Jacob, and Jacob is here. He is working with us over the summer. And Jacob, can I just say how fortunate we are to have you working with our group this summer?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a great start so far, and I look forward to continuing to add value to the company.
Good. So why don't you tell us a little bit of your background?
Sure. So actually pretty similar to Emile, believe it or not. So I've worked in food and beverage as a bartender for several years now at this point. I'm in my fourth year of finance at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. So I've got a couple classes left in the fall. Doing this as the practicum component of my degree. And yeah, much to the same as you, Emil, actually, I've traded options for a couple of years now in the mornings. I continue to work as a bartender in the evenings as well. So I do this Monday to Friday. And then, yeah, I'm at the golf course bartending every once in a while too.
That's awesome. Yeah. It looks like you found a twin over here, right?
Yeah literally. Exactly.
Duplicate.
And you're also doing schoolwork while you're working for us.
Yes, I'm doing schoolwork. I'm writing CFA level 1 in November as well. So I've got a lot going on right now. But as I've always said, busy is good.
Yeah, I could attest to that as well.
I have a similar saying. I have two teenage boys and a tired kid is a good kid.
Absolutely.
Keep them busy. Then Absolutely. They're out of trouble. So why don't we start talking about really big overview, the state of the stock market. So Emile, when you hear the words stock market, what does that mean to you? Obviously, you've got some experience in the markets because you're already trading, but when you thought about the stock market before, what did you envision?
I think when I envisioned that, like you think about like Wall Street and the typical guy in the suit running around yelling at each other on the floor, which is like so far to what it actually is. And then I feel like I grow up and see more, like I realize it's like two different paths completely. I found like, especially growing up, like the information isn't necessarily readily accessible to every like retail investor, like how to properly do things. Lots of people are scared, don't understand the strategies and also just the restraint you need to have when you're in the market. But other than that, like these days, I think it's a bloodbath completely. So everything's always changing, especially with what's going down south. You never know what's going to come out of that guy's mouth next. And mm-hmm. seems to be able to shift the whole market with one word, right? Or a tweet.
Yes, and he has reversed course a number of times because it hasn't always worked in his favor. So you're absolutely right. I love it. So Jacob, I want to switch to you now, because I think that you've had some experience now working in the markets more so than when you were in school and doing trading on your own. So when you first started, is what is happening now what you expected to be doing?
I would say no, in part because, you know, I look at what, you know, what Trump has done down south and how he's been able to completely affect, you know, what the markets have done on a daily basis. You know, I think about April 20th, I believe it was, Liberation Day, and then what happened to the markets shortly after that. But I think the biggest thing that I've come to learn in my time here is, you know, that, yeah, there are, you know, downturns, down cycles in the market. But, you know, if you look over a larger span of time, the market has always corrected and it's ended up higher in the long run. And I think that's one thing, really important thing for people to understand is, you know, they get so caught up in social media buzz and all the attention surrounding these individual securities that get all this hype, and they do really well, sure. But
sometimes,
you know, exactly. That's the critical part. But, you know, they're one-off scenarios. It's most people, 99.9% of people are successful because they're patient with their money. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned from being here is you've got to stay patient. You can't just go out and, you know, chase the next GameStop, right? Because you really never know what's going to happen. And it's about staying patient.
Yeah. And I think that something that we've learned being in the markets for 25 years is we've seen a lot of things happen. And a lot of people tend to go through this period where they believe that the run will continue, or as soon as the market drops, if you jump in at that point, it'll skyrocket up. And we know, we've seen everything happen from the global financial crisis to, you know, what happened in 2020, 2021 with how markets reacted to COVID. Anything is possible. But yes, you are absolutely correct in patience is key. If we take a look at some data points here, we know that over the last 30 years, S&P 500 has returned about 10% annually.
Yeah.
And in Canada, TSX, it's returned closer to 6 or 7% long term. And that 2023 period, that was a bounce back year. As we talked about coming out of COVID, S&P 500 was up 24% after a negative 18% decline in 2022. And in last week's podcast, we talked about the lost decade from 1998 to 2009. Where it was a lost decade where we saw negative returns. However, if you take a look at 2009 to 2020, we had the longest bull market, and that delivered cumulative returns of over 400%. So you're absolutely right. Anything can happen. It's not about individual stock purchases, and it's about being patient with the correct asset allocation setup. And we've seen dozens of corrections where we've seen more than 10% drops, both in the U.S. markets and the Canadian markets. And as you mentioned, over the decades, everything has come up. So that long-term perspective is very important. What about, everybody talks about the stock market. Do you know where I'm going with this one?
I'm not sure. Let's see.
Okay. Oh, I like that answer. Let's talk about the bond market.
Oh.
Okay. People think bonds are boring. And I don't quite absolutely agree with that. When you think about bonds, Emil, what comes to mind?
I had the opportunity to listen to a great speaker at a club at my school, the John Molson Investment Society. And it was alumni from the club who's now working in debt capital markets.
Nice.
And so really just understanding how much actual money really moves through there, it is like drastic compared to regular securities. And so seeing that, and I personally, I just find bonds are a much safer approach. And I think people a lot of time neglect them because everyone wants to win big. Everyone wants to hit the slot machine and, you know, jackpot. But like if you fail to plan and form a sense, then I feel like you leave yourself naked in certain areas, right? As everything does bad, bonds do good, right? So
not always. And that is absolutely fair to think that, because that's what we've been told and probably, you know, even what some of your studies of school have talked about. But the taper tantrum that happened coming out of COVID, where we saw both bonds and equity markets drop, and it seemed like there wasn't any safe place to put your money.
Would you say that that would it's more like, I feel like panic of like globally and less financially. I feel like in that sense where people just like almost lose hope on the whole societal system when a pandemic almost wipes our planet.
Yeah. You know, there have been these huge events mm-hmm. throughout time that have only happened once and have never happened again. And there's a great saying that history never repeats itself, but it tells the same story. Mm-hmm. So while we may never see another pandemic occur again, we will see situations we have in the past, and we will continue to see situations where it throws markets for a loop. Absolutely.
Could I ask you something?
Sure.
How do you assess, especially running a company where you guys manage portfolios, like what do you do in a situation like that where the world just flips and it's like your job to stay calm?
Oh, it's such a great question, because it is difficult to stay calm. But again, I think being in the markets for as long as we have, we understand that everything eventually will correct. And it's just a matter of talking to our clients to ensure that they're not reacting to the markets and that they are keeping those long-term goals and prospectus in mind, because we know that aside from that one lost decade, that the markets have always returned up over that long-term period. So it's a great question. And it's what I find really interesting about it is there have been periods where even though we as professionals know what's happening in the market, we can see it, we understand that it's going through a blip or a bear market, we even start to question how our own money is invested. And that's always fascinating, because we can give great advice to our clients and we can tell them or guide them as to what best decision-making processes need to happen. But in the back of our head, we might be panicking a little bit about our own portfolios. And that's a human condition. That's the psychology of money right there. So do you still think the bonds are boring, or do you see them in a slightly different light?
I'd say, like, I think I need to read more into them. My obsession is the derivatives market, so I'm having a lot of fun with them. A little more.
You two are twins.
No, I love my options. They're a lot of fun. So I just leverage myself through the teeth and watch what happens. It is something I'm really interested in reading more about. I know I have some classes coming up, and I believe it's in like my spring semester, 26, that I'll be actually like looking into them further. For now, it seems like kind of like a dark and mysterious world that no one really talks that much about. So. Yeah.
Over-the-counter trading. Absolutely. You described that beautifully. Yeah, love it. We'll take you off the hot seat for a little bit. Jacob, what do you think? Did you expect that bonds would be a big part of this discussion?
It's a good question, because I think, you know, from my time in school, I understood the importance of asset allocation, which is something that I'm just going to touch on a little bit here and the importance of it. So, you know, when you think about somebody's portfolio, and yeah, there's a lot of people out there that their mind immediately, when you think of financial markets, it automatically goes to stocks or equities.
The market.
Exactly. But if you look at it kind of from a 30,000 foot view, you realize that, you know, and it kind of goes to that diversification aspect as well, where if you're solely in equity securities, and, you know, there's market uncertainty and market risk. Whereas if you have some money in fixed income, it provides you with a little bit of stability. And as well, for people that are in retirement, it provides them with a little bit of income as well, which is one of the biggest things for people that are already retired, is making sure that they're getting enough income in to support their lifestyle. Because as soon as you stop working, you forego your salary, and it's all based on what your retirement savings are and getting that income in. So I think, you know, bonds, no, maybe they're not quite as spectacular.
You were going to say sexy, weren't you?
I was. I didn't, but I was. So bonds aren't quite as sexy as the, you know, equity markets or derivatives markets, because there's not really any opportunity to, you know, 2, 5, 10x your money, but it provides that stability that is required for 95% of people. Sure, there's that 5% of people that have, you know, a lot of their money tied up in equity assets or securities, and they have real estate, whatever, and they don't necessarily need to have, you know, any fixed income stability because of what they have. But the benefit of having that coupled together with equities in an asset allocation, I think it's critical to almost everybody's portfolio.
Correct me if I'm wrong. They outperform, bonds outperform like GICs and other like long-term like saving accounts, correct?
Ideally, yes. GICs will most like, and again, it all depends on the term of the instrument that you're investing in. We have a little bit of a joke here in the office. It's not even really a joke. It's a saying, GICs suck. So there's no reason for individuals to need to purchase a GIC with all of the different options available to them.
100%.
On the stock and the bond markets. But yeah, you know, when we start talking about that, one of the things that we really have to take a look at is the impact of inflation, because inflation erodes your purchasing power. And so ideally, when we're looking at our plans or putting together portfolios for clients, we're always factoring in future inflation rates and, of course, tax rates.
Yeah.
So it's a great question. We started off this discussion touching on Trump, and I think that, you know, Trump is a big part of our lives right now, what we're all experiencing. And, you know, Trump has made some major reversals in his policies and his ways of approaching business. And one of those big reversals had to do with where U.S. Treasury rates were going.
Yeah.
So the bond market can make presidents change course. So if we take a look at bond yields over the past 40 years, from 1981 to 2021, bond yields declined steadily, and they created strong returns as prices rose. And then in 2022, U.S. bonds, and this is the Bloomberg aggregate, it fell about 13%, and it was the worst year in modern history, and that's when we're talking about that taper tantrum that the markets was seeing. But today, the 10-year U.S. Treasury yields have rebounded, and it's around 4.3 to 4.5. Keep in mind, that's 10-year. However, it's much higher than the lows that we saw in 2020, where it was only 0.5%. And of course, you know, we tend to talk about the U.S. markets, but we should also touch on the Canadian markets, because the Canadian 10-year government bond yields have climbed back to over 3.5, so still lower than the U.S. counterparts. But historically, and Jacob, you talked about this, bonds are less volatile. During the global financial crisis, 2008, 2009, do you guys remember that?
I was 8 years old.
I was in daycare.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
It was really bad. The U.S., but even though the markets were performing horribly on a global scale, the U.S. bond index returned 5%, and stocks were down 37%.
And so, I think that just echoes the importance of having, you know, a combination thereof, regardless of what that asset allocation is. Having some fixed income is critical to anybody's portfolio.
100%.
Yeah.
And we had a beer and bonds event not that long ago. And we had 60 people show up, and we had Tony Crescenzi, who is a fund manager and vice president of PIMCO, and he shared some amazing highlights with what's happening. He rubs shoulders with some very important people in the U.S. But Jacob, if I were to ask you what you thought the average age of the attendees at that event was, what would you say?
Well, first of all, I would say that, Karen, you and I bring the age average down.
Correct.
But I would say, if I had to guess, probably over 65.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, so there is this belief that bonds are only important as you get older. But as you alluded to, Jacob, bonds are very important for maintaining balance and providing that, just ensuring that you don't have complete synchronicity of how your investments are moving. You want to have something that's zigging while the rest is zagging.
Yeah, well, that's just the thing, is you don't want everything to be completely correlated.
Correct.
And I think that's goes back to that asset allocation that I keep talking about, is, you know, having things that do things at different times, in the long run, it's going to benefit you for sure.
Yep. Love it. Excellent. Okay, so let's get real here. Let's talk a little bit about school, because you're both in school right now. And Jacob, you've had the opportunity to work in finance for a little bit. Emil, I'm going to start with you.
Let's
because you haven't been in this world yet. You've just been doing stuff on your own. What do you imagine a typical day in finance looks like? Wearing a suit, yelling, papers all over the floor.
Honestly, I think it can really depend on where you choose to go. And I think that's really what I've been realizing is how fast the financial world is. You go banking, people go into private equity, people do wealth management, it's trading, it's all over the place. And so I think that's also something I love so much about it is the opportunity. It's the opportunity to kind of go your own path and figure out like what best suits you. I guess my ideal, I'm a big early morning kind of person. So I love the 6 a.m. I would love to be out of the office by 5. That'd be fantastic. Go golfing. Great.
5.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Work till 5.
Yeah. So I guess as I explore my like educational career, we'll kind of see where I end up. And I'm excited to try some different opportunities and go work in different places throughout my educational career so that at least I can have like dip my toes in the water and kind of see where I'm best suited.
Yeah, that's perfect. So when you think about working in finance, are you thinking spreadsheets or are you thinking relationships? What do you think is the underpinning of the financial markets?
I think relationships are king. I think it's the most important thing, right? Anyone can do spreadsheets. Any analyst can do spreadsheets. Obviously, it's a skill you need to know. It comes with the job. But if you can't talk to people and get along with them, hands will never be shaken. And that's how money moves around the world, right? So how about you? What do you think, Jacob?
You're absolutely correct. You know, especially on this side of the business, you know, being able to manage your relationships, build trust among, you know, not only just your clients, but those that you work with is critical to running a successful business. But if you look at the majority of the people that are in the top positions at any firm, you know, whether it's on the sell side, retail wealth management, wherever, all of them are good with people. And that's the critical component. Like you said, everybody can, you know, plug a couple numbers in, do a VLOOKUP, et cetera, et cetera. But can everybody manage a room full of people that are, you know, the market's down 20% and they're asking these difficult questions? Are you going to be able to stay calm and answer those questions and walk them through it? And I think that's kind of the underpinning and the most important thing about, you know, financial services as a whole is being able to manage and talk to people about whatever scenario is going on.
I love it. So now that you've been working with us, we're trying to remember, have you been with us for 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
8 weeks now.
8 weeks. Yep. Yeah, I thought so. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you. What surprised you the most about what you expected compared to what you actually do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's something that it was almost answered in one of my first, I think it was my first day even, you know, I kind of had a misconception of even just being on the, obviously the retail wealth management side of it, but the idea of, you know, daily monitoring of markets and, you know, executing trades on a daily basis, taking advantage of, you know, price action and all that. Whereas it's like I just mentioned, it's completely focused on the client. You know, there's certain times when trades are executed and stuff like that when it has to be done. But for the most part, it's preparing materials for clients, preparing for meetings, reaching out to prospective clients, trying to draw more people in because, you know, as I mentioned, that's the most important thing. You know, the market's going to do what the market's going to do. And it's really about making sure that your clients are comfortable with their investment program. So yeah, I would say that was probably the biggest thing for me coming in was, you know, thinking that it was going to be a little bit like Wolf of Wall Street. And, you know, like Emil said, you know, papers getting thrown around and everybody's screaming. But no, it's about creating fostering a welcoming and trustworthy environment for both the clients and the people that you work with.
And I would like to touch on that because I was talking to my grandfather. And so I recently gotten him into the markets. Unfortunately, after...
Was he in GICs?
Well, my grandmother was terrified of risk. Mm-hmm. And so they grew up on farms, Alberta, and, you know, farms went bankrupt, like poverty, things like that. And so she was terrified of risk. But it's also because they tried some index funds in the past and just had a terrible experience there. And unfortunately, especially during that time in the 80s and 90s, like the education about like opportunities like this, where you can safely put your money away and like in a place where it's trusted and you have confidence in the people working, the opportunities aren't necessarily there. At least people don't know about them all the time, right? And so I talked to plenty of friends studying different things or on their own paths, and I wonder what they're doing with their money. And lots of them tell me, oh yeah, I'm saving in bank accounts. Like, you're not accounting for inflation. You're not accounting for anything like that, right? So I think the big piece is that, like, bringing the conversation to others and allowing them to see these opportunities.
I think the internet has taken us a far distance with being able to share information, because you're absolutely right. Back in the 80s and the 90s and even a little bit into the early 2000s, information was difficult to come by and you had to trust the person that you were sitting in front of. Now, trusting the person that you're sitting in front of is still very important, but now there's stop gaps where you can actually go and check the information out to verify, but you still need that trust. Mm-hmm. And Colin has a saying, trust is like air. We can't survive without our clients trusting in us. And if we take a look at just drawing this conversation back to what's the most important thing about what we do every day, and Jacob, I think you nailed it when you said it's relationships. A 2018 CFA Institute study found that advisors spend about 40% of their time on client service and relationship management. And that's compared to about 20 to 25% on the actual investment selection itself. Because, and this number, I think this number is low. Compliance and administration, the same survey says that it takes up to 20 to 30% of advisors' time. I would say it's way more. And you know this because you're working on risk tolerance questionnaires and know your products. I mean, your day right now, Jacob, is 100% of compliance.
Absolutely. It's Monday to Friday. As soon as I get here in the morning to when I leave, it's working on that. And I think, you know, the idea that compliance administration only makes up 20 to 30%, that's something that I also think is a misconception, is that, you know, you see the advisors, you see what they're working on, but nobody really sees what everybody else is working on, who the support staff are, who are actually helping get stuff done for the advisors, account openings, you know, helping with, you know, selling for fees and all of that sort of thing. It's, I think it's just as important as the advisor's role, because without them, the advisors would be stretched too thin and they wouldn't be able to be client facing and bring in, you know, new clients and service them. So it's definitely more than, we'll call it in the middle, 25%, definitely more than that.
Yeah. I know my day, I'm lucky if it's only a quarter of my day spent on compliance. And this has really changed because back in 2008, well, I'm going to say before the global financial crisis, when I made a stock recommendation, either a buy or a sell, I didn't have to make notes anywhere. And now I just had to write up the trade ticket. And now you have to identify a number of key data points as to why you're making the recommendation, how it fits within the client's, know your client, know your product. And that's because of the CRM2 that was recently instated in the industry. And before, as long as we felt that it fit the client's, the know your client parameters, you were fine to just do it. And now we have to write everything down, which I don't see as a bad thing.
No, what do you guys think? Absolutely not.
No, I think it's super important, a lot of safety, especially for the client as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about trust, and I think that's the best way is you can prove your trust and prove that your decisions you're making are wise towards the client's needs. I think it's super important. Definitely a lot more work for the back shop though.
Yep.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's, I would say this, gone are the days of being able to sell Aerotyne International sheets and getting 50% commission. You know, like I mentioned, the focus is on the client.
Mm-hmm.
Gone are the days of the commit, not necessarily gone, but, you know, it's being phased out, that commission-based service where, you know, you bring in somebody who brings in money and you get paid for it. It's more about servicing the client and providing them with a high quality offering for, you know, what they're bringing to you, which is business at the end of the day. So, you know, being able to understand the product that you're selling them and not just surface level, like really having a true understanding of how that product works, how it's performed over the past however many years, is critical because it maintains that level of trust.
Yeah. And it's got to be specific to each and every client. Wonderful. Jacob, are there any questions that you would like to ask Emil?
Yeah, absolutely.
As you two are twinsing over here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, obviously I'm almost done school. You kind of just started,
yeah.
But, you know, seeing as you are kind of just getting into it, you have a year under your belt now. Is there a specific avenue you touched on, you know, the different paths that you can take within finance? Is there one right now without any experience that sticks out to you as like, I want to at least give that a shot?
I love trading. Yeah. I absolutely love trading. It's keeps me going, gives me a hard on in the morning. Like, I'm so for it. I was really thinking, I'm pursuing possibly doing banking as well. Quite interested in it. I just think the experience I could like at least accrue to my belt would be so important and vital. And I don't mind hard work. I like hard work. I'm a big believer in pressure makes diamonds or makes coal, right? And yeah. So you kind of got to choose which avenue you want to go. It's kind of a hard question. I really, right now I'm really passionate about trading. And so I'm honestly considering shifting my degree towards economics. I've found a fantastic prof, John Molson Business School, Dr. Lander. He's a fantastic guy. And it's really just changed kind of my perspective, especially just understanding. Like when we talk about CPI and things like that, we're talking about like the public not necessarily understanding all this data that's going around. And it's accessible, but if you don't understand the spreadsheet and the numbers, then it's kind of useless and it still becomes kind of like a hidden avenue where the public doesn't have the information to make necessarily the wisest decisions. I guess this whole profession out here for it, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
You know, you bring up a really good point because at no point is anyone going to say you have to stay in the same stream in order to get this job? Because a lot of the jobs out there today, it's about understanding where the opportunities are and even that a role like that actually exists. Because as you say, a lot of people don't understand what we do, what the markets do, and the treasure trove of opportunities out there for jobs. So I love it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think it's an interesting take because again, as we talked about, you know, you're kind of just getting started in this industry and you got a long road ahead of you. And it's funny.
You're going to make him cry.
I went through 4 years of it. So, but it's funny, you know, you mentioned the banking side of it too. And you know, from my understanding, and that's an itch that maybe one day I'd like to scratch as well. But I think you can kiss golf and in the evenings goodbye.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I know the 100 hours are coming for me if I go there. It's funny, I was actually talking to clients at work and bankers, and you know, they always come in just bitching about the hours they work. Part of my language.
That's two bleeps now. Yeah. I've time stamped it.
So, I just when you look at it, like, they love their jobs, but they seem to like hate the moment, if that makes sense. I think the feeling of gratification after completing a super long deal and spending all those hours must be so fulfilling. And especially just being on the inside of these huge mergers and like watching these huge companies like do business together, like I having an inside look on that would be so interesting.
There's a flip side to that too, when the deal doesn't go through.
Yeah. Oh.
All those hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was super hard. I went to a really good capital markets conference in Montreal, and this was right after Liberation Day. So everyone's panicking about the tariffs, and they were saying around 70% of M&A is done. Deals, like, it's just over. Deals that have been working on for like 3-4 years, just poof, out the window. It can be like a really obviously depressing time with already such a hard career. But I think the skills that you learn there, you fast track experience, right? So you're putting in the hours, but
yeah. Well, like you said, I mean, you know, pressure makes diamonds or makes coal, no. And that's exactly what that is. So, yeah, I think that's it for questions that I've got for you, though.
So I want to just tie it back to our very important roles as advisors, as trusted advisors. From 1995 to 2024, the wealth management industry in North America alone has grown from about $6 trillion to over $40 trillion. In AUM, assets under management. And today, roughly 40 to 50% of Canadian investors work with a financial advisor. And I'm always curious if it's the younger folks or the older folks that are choosing not to work with a financial advisor, because I think we see that on both ends, right? And research by Vanguard shows that advisors can add about 3% in net annual value through behavioral coaching, as we talked about, tax planning, and of course, portfolio construction. So that's my final thoughts of the day. Anything else either of you would like to mention?
I think just kind of echoing what we talked about, just the importance of, you know, building those relationships and the value in trust. Yeah. Because ultimately, you can be the best person in the world at whatever you do. If nobody trusts you or you can't trust people, you're going to have a very difficult time conducting business.
Well, I can even say I wouldn't be here unless I went golfing with Colin. So I went golfing with Colin and my friend Zach Kevin. And suddenly I'm in this room doing a podcast. So
wait, did you beat Colin?
Oh, God, be here.
That's the only reason you're here.
Colin took me for my money.
Nice.
No, it was really good. I was actually going to ask you a question about the behavioral coaching, because I think that's something super important. And I'm realizing this a lot. I just exited a 3-week timeout from trading, from breaking my own rules.
Okay.
Revenge trading is very dangerous. Whoa. So I'm just curious on, like, how does that process go? Like,
it depends on the person, because we are all individuals and we all have a number of different biases that we have to understand that impact our actions. But I love the fact that you recognize this. And as you said, you broke your rules and you put yourself in a timeout. That's huge. And why that's so important is because you recognized it. Because a lot of the biases that people have, and look, biases aren't a bad thing, right? We survive today because we have different behavioral biases. It's not a bad thing, but most people don't recognize it. So I like the fact that you recognized what you were doing.
Yeah, well, I think the credit's also due. I lost quite a bit of money. So you make the mistake over and over again, you realize it's not what you can do. Mm-hmm. And then you try to, like, axe it out. So
let me turn this back around on you. What will you change going forward to avoid making a similar mistake?
Well, frankly, I've just been extending the timeouts. And as I'm currently, I'm loving the markets, I'm loving watching it. And in a time with so much volatility and there's so much money to be made, it's kind of hard to sit back and watch and, like, oh, I knew that was going to happen. I had an idea this was going to happen, but you don't have a foot in the game. And so every time I make the same mistake again, I just extend it the timeout by a week. And so next time I screw up, it'll probably be a month, but hopefully not soon. So it's been good, though. I think even the time off, too, it's a stressful thing. Like, the markets are stressful and it's a zero-sum game. And it's a bunch of smart people trying to take money from you while you're trying to take money from them. And lots of times I'm on the other side of someone with 25 years of experience and I'm just starting to figure it out, right? So,
and not only that, but institutional investors as well. And, you know, people who have every tool at their fingertip and that have been on this ride before and can react even a nanosecond ahead of you. And it's a game changer. Yeah. And so what we believe in is the creation and preservation of wealth. Mm-hmm. So we tend to avoid those high emotional roller coasters that you're describing.
Yeah, well, I will say for my credit as well, I trade in one account specifically. And the other one, I bought a bunch of shares, a few companies, and I just let it ride. So,
nice. Yeah. What advice would you give to Emil about this?
You know, specifically as it relates to trading, because I've been down that road of, you know, having days where it goes really well and you're like, wow, this is such a good day. I'm going to do the same thing again tomorrow. And then tomorrow rolls around and, oh, wow, I just lost everything that I put into that exact trade. And I think, you know, for me, what changed the way that I did it is I just, you know, instead of getting greedy, and I think that's a big thing too, especially for a lot of individuals, and I'm sure some FUD managers out there, is they get greedy with what they think they're going to get in return. Instead of just, you're in the green, take some of it. You know what? And options is completely different than what Canvas Wealth does. And it kind of goes against what I talked about being patient. But, you know, if you see specifically in options, if you see any green, personally, I take them and I move on, because I'd rather take some green than a whole lot of red.
And that's a lesson that you've learned. And hey, you know what? I have a couple of stocks that are at a zero value that I leave in my account, because 25 years ago, I did the exact same thing. So I leave that there as a visual reminder. So every time I go to do a trade, I can see those stock names. I can see what I put into it. I can see what it's worth now. And that gives me pause.
I had a question. At Canvas, we're talking bonds and safety and that. And do you guys hedge portfolios with puts as well? Or is that?
We typically don't get into that specifically. We're more about global diversification and strategies around that. I will say, however, that some of the pooled funds that we work in and manage money does use hedging, does use a certain amount of puts and calls and derivatives, but it really depends on that specific holding because, as you know, there are very strict regulations around that when it comes to manage money. But we are way over time now. This has been a great discussion.
We did fantastic.
No, you guys are made for radio.
Well, if trading doesn't work out, then
we can start a show. You want to start our own podcast? Works for me. Let's ditch this place.
Consider it done.
Awesome.
All right. Well, till next time.
That was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.